month. We'll let Nate and Steve get out there, and then we'll go. All right, good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, May 31st, 2016, and ask if everyone would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, thank you and good morning. First item is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so? And seeing no one moving immediately, we'll move on to consideration of minutes. Wayne, this is both from May 10th and May 17th.
Move approval of both the May 10th and May 17th minutes.
And I'll second it. Any additions, corrections, or notes?
No.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed, Wayne.
Move approval as listed.
And I'll second. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consideration of claims?
Also, I like that, too. I'll move approval.
And I'll second. Any further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda, Wayne, please add utility permit 1675 through 1692.
92, no others, okay. I move approval with noted changes.
And I'll second. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items. First item is consideration of Resolution 1667, amendment of the FY16 budget. The one and only Lisa Martin.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
The amendment.
Anything anyone said about me this morning? All right.
Calling you a gentleman. The amendment that is in front of you was published in all three newspapers on May 19th, as required by law. The budget amendment needs to be done by today in order to allow time for a budget protest in the next 30 days, if so desired. The revenues are increasing overall by $3.4 million from the last amendment, which is about 7.9%. We'll talk about where those dollars are coming from. The majority of that increase are related to grants, state revenues, which include road use tax, BPTC credits, commercial and industrial replacements, and bond. The majority of it is the bond proceeds, which is for the refinance, which occurs, which has occurred. The refinance took place on the 26th, and all went fine.
And so let's spend just a minute there before we move on.
Uh-huh.
So that's $2.5 million coming in and $2.5 million coming out, going out,
right,
to pay off bonds, which ended up, all said and done, saving the people of Story County $75,000.
Wasn't it 83?
80-something, I thought.
Well, I thought it went down.
But it might have gone down to 75. Yeah, you could be correct. Yes. You know, the revenue amendment portion is primarily for fund balance projections and getting closer to actuals. Mm-hmm. So I did amend a lot of departments' revenues because of that. The expenses are increasing overall by $4.1 million. From the last amendment, which is a 9.8% increase. $1.2 million of those expenses is for the amendment to the mental health regional payment. $2.4 is for bond payoff for the refi. And the remaining expenses that are being amended are mainly for salaries and benefits, purchase of the animal control building, and other unplanned expenses. When we originally did the budget, we did not budget 100% salaries for the departments. We wanted to, at your direction, be closer to the end of the year, amend in what they need for their salaries, so closer to actuals. With this amendment, the fund balances for the main operating fund of the county, which is the general supplemental, it looks to be about 27%.
Which we'd like it to be 25%.
Mm-hmm. Correct. We're looking at the mental health fund of about 0.52%, which is totally fine because the region is where all the payments come from. So having a small mental health fund balance is not a problem. The rural fund is going to be at about 17%. Our original budget on the rural fund was lower than that. It was actually, our refi was, or our amendment was at 17.8, and we're at 17.1, so we're real close on that. Secondary roads fund, we are going to have about a 37% ending fund balance on that. Darren and I talked. He didn't want to amend any expenses because he thinks he's going to be okay on that. There were some amendments for revenues, so the fund balance is higher. Road use tax, again, increase. So,
which is roughly $800,000 more than we were getting before. Wayne, any questions before we open the public hearing?
No.
Lisa, anything else? Are you ready for me to open the public hearing?
Unless you have any other questions of me, I think that covers the amendment pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, just to let me tell you what I heard and make sure that we're on the same page. The majority in both revenues and expenses is from the bond refinancing, money coming in, money going out. We're seeing a savings by doing that. Second big one on the expense side is the additional $1.2 million to the mental health fund that we did in budget. And then the rest of it is based on our current practice of budgeting about 94% of salaries and then amending it at the end of the year. Right?
Correct.
With that, I'll open a public hearing and ask if there's anybody who'd like to address this topic. All right, seeing none, I'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action.
I would move resolution 1667, amending the FY16 budget as presented.
And I'll second. Further discussion?
A compliment. Over the last several years, as we've gone through the entire budgeting process and working with the board and some of the way in which you have kept us abreast, and I think it's really a testament to how well that we've been able to manage things, and I just wanted to publicly thank you for your leadership in this particular area, and it certainly made it much easier for me, and I'm sure Supervisor Sanders, who probably is more in the numbers arena than I am, but it has certainly helped me be able to have a full grasp and understanding of where we are and what are the big ticket items and how we are moving the county forward. So I just wanted to publicly comment and thank you for the work that you do.
Yeah, and I'll echo that. We're really fortunate to have Lisa Markley working on this, but since we might have a new supervisor appointed as early as this evening, and we've got a couple candidates for supervisor sitting in the audience, I just want to point out, and Lisa, maybe you comment on this before we vote, this is one of the benefits to working as hard as we work to produce a balanced budget every year. We've done it now either 3 or 4 years in a row, and it gives us great flexibility near the end of the year to move more toward actuals without being completely stressed about what our fund balance is.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
Correct. And so the hard
and our revenues and expenditures are still it's still a balanced budget. We're still real close to our expenses being.
Right. But the beauty with the balanced budget, that's a number on a piece of paper that exists the day that we pass it, and then everything goes to reality from there. The beauty with starting there is it gives you great flexibility to deal with some of these things that you don't expect. And so I'm really proud that we're there. I hope we're able to continue that. Thanks, Lisa. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 1667 passes. Second public hearing item is consideration of Resolution 1670 expressing intent to authorize a tax increment revenue loan agreement in the amount not to exceed $1.5 million. Evening, Anderson.
Hi, Evening.
Morning.
Good morning.
See, Ethan, you didn't know when you agreed to take on the civil work of the board that you were also going to become a bond attorney. How about that?
I didn't, but it's exciting, and we have the opportunity to work with Lisa and Renee and Leanne. We've got a good plan here. We're following our timeline, and so this resolution is the next step in the schedule. And if it's approved today, we can get Renee out tomorrow looking for bids with the local banks and present those on the 21st.
So the beauty of this is we're following roughly the same process we followed when we did Dagan's Lake. The difference is we had outside counsel that I want to say we paid close to $50,000 Now we're able to keep that in-house, which clearly will be a savings of $50,000 or thereabouts, and allows us to go through this process. Ethan, we're really appreciative of you taking this on, along with Lisa and Renee, and I think it's really a good way for us to approach this since we're not reinventing the wheel. Wayne, anything before we go to the public hearing?
Nope.
All right, with that, I will open the public hearing. Anybody who has comments about Resolution 1670? Surprising, not seeing anybody moving to the microphone on that one. Discussion? Yeah, I'll close the public hearing and turn to the board.
Good. I will move Resolution 1670, expressing an intent to authorize tax increment revenue loan agreement in the amount not to exceed $1,500,000.
Estimate. Yeah, and I'll second it, and then I want to make sure that since we didn't have anybody come forward on the public hearing, which hopefully Arden's healthy, because I really expected Arden to be here to talk about this. This is the research park, and that is expected to be a $3.4 million total project. But this $1.5 million would be the first year of that project, so I would fully expect that this is something that the Board of Supervisors is going to be dealing with over the next couple of years, but this gets us at least started with the project. I know we got several people here today from the Research Park and from Conservation. This is a great project. My belief is this is the most appropriate way to fund what is truly a great project, so I'm fully in favor. And I know that our friend Arden Griner has felt differently about using tax increment financing for this purpose. I think it's exactly what this tool is made for. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1670 passes. Additional items, consideration of Resolution 1668 and Appropriations Amendment. That dang Markley, once we amend the budget, she wants to actually be able to appropriate it so she can use it.
Right? 60, 60, 60.
Okay, so the appropriations amendment. Almost all departments are touched in this one because of salaries. And as you just said, in order to spend the dollars, we need to appropriate the dollars. Now, not all of the departments are 100% appropriated still, even after this amendment. There's still dollars left to appropriate, which... Since we haven't appropriated all of them, it doesn't require a budget amendment at that point. It just is an additional appropriation if necessary. And there are a few that could happen that we need to appropriate the additional dollars. Do you want me to go through it, or do you want to...
Any high points.
Just any high points. Anything to highlight.
No. Actually, no high points.
Okay. All right.
The actual... lowering of some of them are substantial, like Conservation Board asked for amendment of minus $215,000. That's just because of spending pattern that isn't going to happen. VA, we're not lowering it, we're raising it, but we're actually spending less in the VA department because of one less staff person all year, so that makes a difference. Animal control looks really odd. We're increasing by $202,000, but that's because part of her dollars, part of the special animal care dollars are going to be purchasing the building, and if that happens by the end of the fiscal year, we need the dollars in there.
And as far as you know, everything seems to be moving along.
I haven't heard a word. Right. I don't know where that's at.
Yeah, I have not.
Ethan, you want to address that?
Yeah.
Ethan and I talked about it briefly a month or so ago, and I went ahead and put it in this year's amendment.
Sure.
If it doesn't happen, we're going to have to amend right away in July also.
Right. To facilitate the sale, we need to break off the small parcel accounting purchasing, approximately 3.5 acres. The surveyor names.
Stump?
Yeah, Brad Stumbo is working on that. He should get it to the county here within the next few weeks. He said probably 3 weeks last week, so I anticipate here again the next couple weeks. We should have the abstract created and ready for a title painting here in the next few weeks. And then it's just. Satisfying and their conditions, but it should be on track for a June 30th. My understanding, when a platted survey comes into the county, is it goes through interdepartmental review, and that takes probably 2 weeks. So it's going to be real close to the June 30th timeline. But we're optimistic. If everything falls into place, it can get done.
Yeah, we're actually dealing with this on both sides of the county, right? We're selling a building over in Ames where we're dealing with going through all the due diligence, trying to get it done by June 30th, and maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. And then we're buying this building for animal control.
Right.
Again, same kind of thing. Like Lisa says, if it doesn't happen by June 30th, it just means we're going to have to turn around and amend the budget immediately as we go into FY17.
Right.
That's correct. We're working with Dan Baffy, a local attorney representing the seller. And he coincidentally was the same attorney that helped do the estate for the animal fund.
For that.
For creating
well,
friends of.
Put a lot of good dollars into it. Yeah, that fund's been around for a while, but a few years ago that got a big chunk of money into it, yeah.
Which, and I'll just point out, that's where half the funds for the purchase of the building are coming from,
correct,
out of that
right.
Friends and Animals Fund. Right. Further discussion? All right. Turn to the board.
Okay. I move approval of Resolution 1668, the Appropriation Amendment.
And I'll second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Next is Resolution 1669, Interfund Operating Transfer Amendment.
You budget for transfers at the beginning of the year. We have a interfund operating transfer resolution at the beginning of the year. Sometimes those needs change. There are two things that I'm changing, and that is the maximum transfer from general to capital projects be $300,000, again, for the purchase of the animal control building. And then the moving the dollars from the TIF fund to the Urban Renewal Project Fund, which is where we pay the claims out of, not to exceed $689,000 because the balance of $435,000 needs to be moved. So we didn't have enough operating transfer put in originally.
Sure, and that's within our policies on the TIF side of the 50%.
Correct, correct.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
Questions?
And I think they both say up to. So if the money doesn't need to be transferred, obviously it doesn't get transferred.
Okay. No. All right. Mm-hmm. If you're ready, make a motion.
Okay. I would move approval of 1669, the Interfund Operating Transfer Amendment.
And I'll second it. Further discussion. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Interoperating Fund Transfer passes. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Next item is consideration of Story County Commissioners of Veterans Administration. They'd like to recommend that we, the Board of Supervisors, increase their number from 3 to 5, effective July of 16. Brett, come on up. And commissioners as well.
If you want to come up. We're going to have to pay them a little bit because, they couldn't afford to raise one of them.
So we don't have your chair with us today.
No, I'm acting chair today. He had a VA appointment with him and his father the same today.
Oh.
And once you get an appointment, if you change it, to get two appointments at the same time is tough. So. He called me and gave me his ideas. We've been discussing this for some time. In the 3 years I've been on the commission, there's been a few times when we would have trouble with having the majority at the meeting, so we'd have to change it, and that kind of disrupts a lot of things if we do. People that planned on coming to see it would have to be sure and watch the agendas. So, and we'd also noticed in the last 3 years that we've had more applications than we've had in the past. In the way past, you couldn't get off the board of the commission unless you found your replacement. Now we're having 3 and 4 people apply for the position, which we think is a great thing. I've talked to other counties. They say they have a hard time at the bottom and find people. We've got a good reputation going, and we're on a good roll, so we'd like to increase it. It would make it easier for us to have a majority at the meeting. One county, they have one of their commissioners go south in the wintertime. And they can still progress and have their meetings and take care of things as they should. We feel that if we have two more representatives in the county, we'll get more referrals in. When Pat came from Colo, our increase in the Colo veterans coming to see Brett and filing claims has I don't know if it's quadrupled or if it's, you know, it's increased quite a bit. So I'd like to see somebody from the southwest and the northeast part of the county come in and help us out. It would be easier for us to have the majority. It would also be easier to be gender balanced rather than one person we'd have, could have a couple people on. We look forward to their input too, because we don't see a lot of female applicants come in for to see Veterans Affairs. We feel if we had a commissioner, female commissioner in an area of the county, they would be able to talk those people into coming in. It's a barrier that's hard to crack, and I think we can help by doing that. I think we're covered right now in Ames, Story City, and Cole. We've kind of got the center part of it cut out in just the northeast or northwest part. I'd like to see the other two areas. And we have more representative in more organizations, and that's one of the key things is belonging to an organization like the American Legion, the VFW, veterans, Vietnam veterans, those kind of organizations that have those veterans. And I belong to two of those organizations, and it seems like every meeting that I'm at, there's somebody that asks me about, well, can I get this or can I get that? We send them down to Brett, and it works out. So we've been studying this since March, and in May we adopted a resolution. We had a vote for between 3 and 5 members. After we discussed it, it was recommended to a motion was made to recommend to the Board of Supervisors to increase the number of commissioners for Veterans Affairs from 3 to 5. It was seconded and passed unanimously. Mm-hmm. That's why we're here today.
Outstanding. Pat, what's your assessment?
We also looked into the situations of all 99 counties and how many of them were 3 and how many were 5. And what we found is there's 16 of the 99 counties have 5 commissioners. Usually it's the larger county populations that have the more commissioners. And like Blackhawk, Lynn, Scott, Muscatine, Woodbury, Hamilton, I think you guys now have that. But anyway, the 16, some of them are home-based counties just like we are. And we feel that the additional people out there among the public would be very beneficial. And like you said, we could become gender balanced. And I personally would like to see him stay on. He's very good for this group. And his term is up this year. And I hate to have him leave because he's been a real good base for us. But those two additional people will really help us out, especially on the different things that Brett has, like our fall supermarket. And then this a couple of weeks ago, we had another situation where people was there at the Band Shell Park, and we were able to serve a lot of veterans. People sometimes just don't want to come in, but when they know that there's a commissioner around in their community or in their area, they will seek them out rather than just taking an initiative themselves to go somewhere. But
true.
I do think this would probably be beneficial for Story County.
Would be beneficial. Brett, budgetary implications? What does this do budgetarily?
Well, there isn't a commissioner that's there for the money. Let's put it that way. It's $50 a month is what they get in commission or compensation. And then there's a fall school that they attend. That's $30. Depend on where they live at it, on the transportation to and from the meetings, 50 cents a mile. Probably in a nutshell, we're looking at about $1,000 per commissioner.
Okay.
But like both of them have said, the outreach is really what we're after. We have two more commissioners out there in different locations. We've never had a commissioner south of Highway 30.
How many of those are small meetings and so forth? We do have vehicles available that could be utilized for traveling to Des Moines or
right.
Carpool would be
like carpool.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So
we did that last year.
We do now. Yeah.
Yep. And so, and looking at the code 35B, and let me just read the appointment part of it. Because in here it's really talks about how you would do this. 35B.4, members of the Commission of Veterans Affairs shall be appointed by the Board of Supervisors to staggered 3-year term. at its regular meeting in June. However, a member shall serve until a successor has been appointed and qualifies. The board may remove an appointee at any time for negligence of duty or maladministration. A vacancy on the commission shall be filled for an unexpired portion of the regular term in the same manner as regular appointments are made. If the Board of Supervisors increases the Commission of Veterans Affairs members to 5 members, the initial terms of the two new affairs members shall be 2 and 3 years, respectively. So number four would be
come on for a 2-year term, and
yep.
with the ability to be reappointed.
Right.
And so currently the code, there is no term in it. But once your term is up, you could be reappointed, provided you didn't have other suitable applicants.
Correct.
Let's say, though, that's still a discretion, is it not? Because you could have applicants. And I'm going back historically. Harlan Barton, for example, was it 20-something years?
Yes.
I think he served. Now, during that term, we didn't have a lot of applicants,
mm-hmm.
Wanting to serve. But there is some flexibility in this. And so part of my question to the commission is that I know that we have talked about trying to increase gender balance, if at all possible, among our veterans and so forth. That if this was approved, let's say that you didn't have any female applicants. Are you going to continue to work toward filling that to make sure you had one rather than just going to all 5 males? I guess that's
a
question I want to throw out for you to consider.
Part of the way that you read the law is it's we have the position open for 90 days,
right.
Striving to get men and women
right.
to apply. I don't think in the last few cycles we've had a problem with either men or women apply. I think we've had plenty, and that's part of it. Is I mean, when you go to 5 seats, as long as you have 5 people to appoint, you're good.
Right.
And when we ever get to a point where we just don't have the applicants, then you end up dropping back to 3, and that happened in Montgomery County. They had to do that. But
with your fair, your outreach, and things like this, and I know last fall I had the chance to attend the one, and we do have spouses of veterans and. Several of them have had, military connections, and I think the likelihood of encouraging some of those to become a commissioner is a lot stronger now, and I maybe attribute that to the overall outreach that has been generated here within Story County in the last 5-8 years in particular, but certainly I've seen a tremendous positive outreach in our community, and I don't know if the Freedom Flight had much to do with it or not, but I think it played a part because of the publicity that was received, and more people began to recognize that there are services available, and then through your newsletter and other communication, I believe that the commission has done an excellent job in trying to do more in this particular area. So, but I was just curious in terms of the mindset of that if it was approved to go to 5, understanding that the 90-day situation is still there, it wouldn't preclude you of having all 5 males, for example, if you've done due diligence.
Mm-hmm. Or 5 females.
Or 5 females.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, Paul Tooth, prior to his passing, worked closely with you, Brett, as we started to analyze all this. When he passed, I asked Deb Shildroth, who is the board's liaison to Veterans Affairs, to dig into this. Deb, do you have anything that you'd like to add?
Good morning, board and commission. I just wanted to note that we have to date received 7 applications for the commission. 3 of those are from females, and 1 is a reappointment request, and the closing date for those applications is today. So that's where we're at with applicants.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ethan, do we need to know anything about the board's purview in making the decision to go from 3 to 5 or 5 to 3, or is that strictly rest with the board of supervisors?
That's strictly rest with the board of supervisors. The session says that the regular meeting in June is for supervisors.
Okay. Anything else, Wayne?
Nope.
All right.
I would move that we accept the recommendation of the Veterans Commission to increase the number to 5.
Yeah, and I'll second it. I will just say I like your idea about representation throughout the county, and I really like the idea of gender balance wherever possible. I'll be watching closely to watch the inner working. Sometimes when you go from 3 to 5, it can really alter the way a commission works. And I would say great attention on your part to making sure that 5 does not turn into a cliquish kind of organization.
Sure.
Any further?
No.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. We're now 5 commissioners. We'll make our appointments in June based on the applications that we receive. Please go through those and give your input to the Board of Supervisors.
Thank you very much.
Harry, thanks.
Thank you.
Pat, thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Brett, good job. Herd is going to report next week, so we don't have that. No departmental reports today. Other reports, we got our annual report from the Ames Economic Development Commission. Drew Camp and Angie Gordon Camp have come to see us today.
Pull up the presentations real quick. What's all of that? Okay, just to get started, I'm Drew Camp, and I'm the Director of Story County Community Outreach and Director of Government Relations for the Ames Chamber of Commerce.
I'm Angie Darnkamp. I'm the Director of Workforce Solutions for the Ames Chamber of Commerce.
And I'm going to start off. We're here and happy to talk about the partnership that Story County and the Ames Economic Development Commission have developed over the last 3 years. Before we kind of get into the thick of things that I want to talk about, I want to first kind of go through and give a little bit of an outline of things I do want to cover in my presentation before turning it over to Angie to talk about her work with Workforce Solutions. Some things I want to cover are some community projects I'm working on throughout the county assistance programs that we have available and some of the impacts they've made, the Story County Economic Development Group, the C2C or Cornerstone to Capstone Comprehensive Plan, the U.S. Highway 30 projects and impacts we're seeing there, the Story County state and federal legislative priorities, and then how we've been able to add those to what we're doing with our work at the Chamber on the legislative side, and then introduction to Peter Ampey for Story County community outreach support, and then touch on our workforce solutions before I hand it over to Angie to talk more in detail about that. Some of the community projects that we're seeing throughout the community, we're seeing strong activity, largely due to the board's involvement with some of their assistance programs, which I will touch on next. But I continue to work with the City of Cambridge on a new community center, City Hall, and library. We're seeing a lot of action down in Cambridge. Rick and I were just down there on Friday for a couple of ribbon cuttings for some businesses that they've opened recently down there. And we've been happy with the activity we're seeing down there. And I've been very happy to work with them in bringing in some unique funding resources, both public and private. We were able to set up a foundation down there working with Jennifer Garst at Story County Community Foundation to bring in some private donations for that project. We were also able to set up a similar foundation in Collins to assist in the construction of a new fire station, and we've been happy to see that move along as well because that's been an ongoing project since I took this position in July of 2013. We also continue to work with the City of Gilbert and the Gilbert Community School District to identify and secure financial resources to assist in putting an off-the-road trail along Grand Avenue, 530th Avenue, Granton Street, which this county plans on working on in FY17 in their roads program. So we look forward.
So we budgeted half the cost for that off-street trail. Barron continues to work on getting the easements necessary to do that. But when we talked about doing it, Gilbert and the Gilbert School System indicated that they would try to secure funding for that second half of that.
Yeah, so we've been happy to assist them with that because that's a great project and could really be a good quality of life and a safe route to school as well. I continue to work with an individual that I met at a recruiting event in Minneapolis to try to fill the Van Wall building and Blue Sky Commons building down in Huxley. It would be a really good project if we can move it along, but as these things go, sometimes we are seeing it take a little bit of time to get to where we would want it to be, but that's to be expected. And I do attend COLA development group meetings and offer guidance and leads to them. They meet every other month, quarterly, so I make it to those as I can. I usually make it to most of those. The next thing I want to talk about is the county assistance programs. We've seen a lot of good activity throughout the county. I think that's an important piece to highlight is that it's been throughout the entire county that we've seen some assistance garnered from these programs, largely from the Urban Renewal Area Project application, which is now open and will be till the beginning of July. And we look forward. I know I've talked to a few people, including Gilbert, Cambridge, and a few other communities who are excited to put some applications in for some potential funding from Urban Renewal Area project funding that we've seen. I think $250,000 last year we were able to invest in communities throughout the county. So we look forward to having that continue to grow this year as well.
And I think, and Drew, help me if I'm mistaken here, I think in the last 3 years, the board has been able to invest in every community except for Gilbert and Ames at this point. I think every other community has received some assistance.
I believe so, yes, and I'm pushing Gilbert to make sure they get an application in this time around for that trail project, so I think that would be a really good project for that use. The facade grant program, I was really happy to hear a couple weeks ago here at the meeting when you guys put it to a first-come, first-serve open application year-round. That was an issue we had noticed off the bat was some people were having a hard time being able to identify businesses and work it out in the period that they were given. So I think this around the year-round application period will really help with that, and we'll see some more activity, hopefully. And I'm really trying to make sure we're getting out and educating people on what's available with that program because we have seen a lot of good benefits from it in the communities that have used it. For example, Zeering with Nigel's Bar, they put a nice new facade on up there, and Zeering has been very active in a lot of the county funding programs, and we've been happy to see that, especially with the investment we've seen up there with Dakin's Lake, so they kind of go hand in hand. And then just on May 18th, the Story County Economic Development Group allocated pool funds in a total amount of $14,600 to nine projects throughout the county. And we were happy to see a variety of projects for quality of life, signs, Main Street projects. There was a good variety, and we were happy to see the activity and the amount of applications there because that's obviously the purpose of those funds, and we're happy to see people being active and trying to utilize them. And then with the Story County Economic Development Group, as I touched on, we met on May 18th, and like I said, we distributed $15,000 in pool funds on nine projects throughout the county. One thing that Leanne and I have been working on recently is to redraft the group's bylaws and the county funding or pool fund program. It will modernize and legitimize both. They're both in need of some updating, so we're kind of looking forward to discussing this at our next meeting on July 20th at the Roland Community Center.
Yeah, and so I think it's important to stop there. Group, the Story County Economic Development Group came forward and I think asked for an increase in funding of $25,000 during our budget cycle, and we as a board turned them down this year, and one of the things that we asked for is a full review of their organizational documents and how they operate. So I'm appreciative that you guys are digging in to that.
And Leanne's been very instrumental in assisting with that as well. And then I wanted to touch on as well that Angie, with her leadership and work, we just recently completed the 2016 Labor Shed Report, which is a critical asset as we look at bringing people in so we can kind of provide a snapshot of where we're drawing talent from and throughout Story County. And it's a really critical tool for not only the major cities in the county, but all cities and unincorporated areas as well in the county to make sure that they are aware where we're drawing talent from. And we also wanted to make sure we showed our appreciation to the county and the Story County Economic Development Group, who are both financial contributors to that plan. The next thing I wanted to touch on is the Cornerstone to Capstone plan, or the C2C plan. I was fortunate enough to be able to assist in the vetting and selection of MSA and Confluence as the consultants for the project, and I think I can speak for people who have worked with them that we've been happy with the work that they have done so far, and I look forward to seeing what they present to the board next week for the final approval of the plan. Another big piece and big project that we have been working on within our office, and I know the county has been very active with as well, is the U.S. Highway 30 projects. Myself and several of my colleagues have been integrally involved with the discussions concerning not only the U.S. and I-35 interchange, but also just the access issues between the Ames and Nevada corridor on Highway 30. We know that's going to be a very big issue moving forward, and we want to make sure that a plan is put forward that's going to make everyone happy and serve everyone in the best manner possible.
Majority.
Uh-huh.
Change that word, everyone.
Everyone. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. That's an important clarification. I did want to also mention that the Iowa Department of Transportation's decision, just the people it can impact, it'll have implications on the Eastern Industrial Annexation Area that we've been working so hard on, especially Dan and a bunch of my colleagues at the AADC, as well as a lot of people in this room, as well as the well-documented impacts to the city of Nevada, businesses within the corridor, home and landowners in the corridor, residents and travelers utilizing the corridor, and farmers needing to get access to their fields and get to be able to get their goods to market as well. So it's important that we get this right. And we've been happy to be at the table as we move forward with that.
Right now, this board has gone ahead and pushed up the paving of 600th North from Highway 30 to Lincoln Highway. Hopefully that's going to happen next year. It depends on if Darren's able to get all the right-of-ways and everything done. But now that's going to impact this project. The fact that we're going to spend about $1 million paving a mile of road is going to impact, I would think, the way the Story County Board of Supervisors is going to feel about restricted access on that road specifically.
Very much so.
And, Supervisor Sanders, do you know if they committee, the task force that Supervisor Toop served on, are they having other meetings still coming on up at a later date, and are you in
the
community?
So they had their final meeting just before Paul's passing, and I think there were indications at that time that that group was going to continue to work, but IDOT now has said, okay, we're taking this off of our five-year calendar and we're not dealing with it again. I think 2023 was the date I heard was the next time the DOT is going to talk about it.
Great, thank you.
The next thing I wanted to talk about is I was very happy that this was able to happen. With my role as Director of Government Relations at the Ames Chamber of Commerce, we've also been able to integrate the county's policy priorities at both the state and the federal level. Last year, Story County was able to put together some priorities for our trip to Washington, D.C., which is coming up in 2 weeks now, and it was the first time that Story County has ever explicitly and directly had policy priorities that were presented on that trip, and we look forward to continuing that tradition this year and in the years to come. And in another nice piece we were able to do is also at the state legislative side, we were able to develop some priorities for the 2016 state legislative session. And just for an example, two of the big ones would be mental health and then also water quality. And then there's also some pieces with corrections and the sheriff's department and public safety. So how that works is I'll go talk to the Iowa State Association of Counties. We discuss their priorities, then I come back, and then I'll meet with the board, the elected officials, and the department heads, and we'll kind of iron out what we want to have in those policy priorities for the state legislative session. Last year we did it in September, and we'll probably do that around the same time this year as well, because it was a really good interaction. It was really good to have those down there as well, to have in our back pocket, to make sure that I was able to talk about those as well as everyone else that's advocating for those priorities down in the capital.
This program has given us nice cohesion, both for the federal and the state priorities. I'm disappointed this year, Wayne, will be the first year in many that we're not going to have somebody on that federal trip. I had actually gone ahead and got that in 2 weeks where that you're going out to D.C., right? And I had actually went ahead and bought a plane ticket and was planning on going out, and then just with the changes that the board's undergoing right now, decided that that was the wrong week for me to be out of the office, and so we won't have representation. We don't have anything major, although I do believe at some point somebody, Wayne, from the county is going to have to make a trip out there to talk about the Corps of Engineers ground and the improving arm wrestling match that we have over acquiring that is required by law by the U.S. House of Representatives, I think in 2008.
Yep, it's been a while. Yep. And then water quality is obviously going to be an issue as well. We're seeing that throughout the state, and that's an issue we will be discussing while we're out there. And then one thing I also wanted to touch on is we've been able to add Peter Ampey as a supplemental staff member to our outreach and our workforce development efforts, and it's been a very nice asset having an extra set of ears and eyes on everything. He's been a very nice addition to our work we're doing with the county, and he's been attending a lot of the meetings. He was down in Cambridge with us on Friday. He was at the Story County Economic Development Group a couple weeks ago, and we look forward to continuing that to make sure that he can provide some of the skills and assets that he has to assist the county as well. And the last thing I wanted to touch on before I pass it over to Angie to talk a little bit more about Workforce Solutions is our Workforce Solutions program. Since the approval of the original economic contract in the spring of 2013, Workforce Solutions and workforce development and workforce availability issues have been something that's very major that we've been trying to address with businesses and industries throughout the county. The creation of the position of Director of Story County Community Outreach was very integral in being able to get into the 7 school districts throughout the county, and it was something that we've heard from a lot of the business, our business contacts, that they weren't able to do. They had a hard time getting into those school districts prior to the creation of this position. But as we saw in best practices, a lot of times they say chambers, business organizations, whatever it may be, need to act as the conduit for ISU, for DMAC, for the businesses, and for the school districts to get everything brought together and be that critical link. And we've been able to do that since the creation of this position. And I think that's one of the biggest things we've been able to do, because this is such a huge issue. And getting that tie into those school districts has been very big. And now that we have someone as good as Angie working in the workforce development, the Director of Workforce Solutions, she has extensive HR experience having worked for Hagee Manufacturing. And we've been really happy with the work that she's been able to do since August. Since coming on board. So without further ado, I will turn it over to her to talk a little bit more about what she is doing with the Workforce Solutions
program. Yeah, and as you turn it over to Andy, I'll just say that I was really, really excited to be able to bring this kind of focus and expertise that Andy brings to us. I think, Drew, help me if I'm mistaken, in the first quarter of 2016, Story County is recognized as having the lowest unemployment rate in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great thing, but it brings some inherent difficulties for some of our employers as well.
Yeah, it brings its challenges as well, but that's okay. We can deal with that. Thanks for the kind words there, Drew. My goodness. So, yes, I joined the Ames Chamber of Commerce in October of 2015 as their Director of Workforce Solutions. So one of the first things that I do, we have a free job board called WorkNames.com. It's free for both employers and job seekers. Anybody can post their jobs there. I do kind of monitor that just to make sure that we don't get outside forces trying to post some positions that maybe aren't what we would want posted, or trying to pull our workforce away from our area, things like that. But in general, I really haven't seen anything like that. We get an average of 600 to 700 visitors per week on that site. That's an increase of over 200 visitors per week compared to last year.
How many positions are on there right now?
You know, it varies, probably over 1,500. I didn't look at it this morning.
Yep.
We also go out and scrape national websites like Indeed to pull in jobs that are in this area. So if you have companies that maybe don't think about our job board, their jobs are still there. So that's a really nice way to bring a focus in for somebody who's looking.
I'm really focused just on Ames, though.
Story County.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So other entities could.
Absolutely. Yep. We get a lot, you know, just from the general area around Ames and Story County.
Why there was some discussion when this was created and what it was going to be called? Was it going to be called Work in Ames? Was it going to be called Work in Story County? And I believe the deciding factor was most people in the state and nationally, if you say Ames, Iowa, they have an idea of where that is. If you say Story County, Iowa, a lot of people don't have any idea where that is or that it encompasses Ames. And I think that that's the reason ultimately that name was selected, rather than it just referring to Ames.
Yes. That has a lot to do with it. You know, Ames is known just because of Iowa State University and that being, you know, a nationally recognized name. Ames goes along with that. You know, we've kicked around the idea of getting other URLs as well. So that's definitely not off the table to, you know, purchase those and have them all filter to one area. So it's definitely something that we look at. Industry and education roundtable discussions. This is something that I worked with all seven school districts in the county to bring them together along with business leaders in the county as well and put them all in one room and have some real heart-to-heart discussions about what needs to happen to make sure that our students in Story County are ready for the workforce. Whether that means after a four-year degree, whether that means after a PhD, or whether that means coming right out of high school, they need to have some essential, what we call soft skills, when they come into the job force. So we are having a series of three meetings to begin with. The first meeting was focused on jobs that would require a high school diploma through an associate's degree or some kind of certificate. We brought businesses that hire people in those areas, sat them down with educators, and had some discussions. The second meeting was focused on jobs that would require a bachelor's degree and higher. Just for ease of discussions, we separated them out like that. And then on June 20th, we're going to have our third meeting, and that will kind of flip the tables to where education will report back to all of those industry leaders and even some that weren't able to attend or excited to come, and discuss what they learned and how they want to make changes to their curriculum and how they integrate business and industry into education. As we know, the workforce is changing at a really rapid pace, and education sometimes has a hard time keeping up with that, and understandably so. And so if they can get business leaders in there to help them, advise them, be in the classroom, be that voice. If any of you have kids, you know, if I tell my kids something, they don't listen. But if Drew comes in and tells them the exact same thing, then they'll listen. Same thing happens in the schools. So hopefully we can get
things. So are you finding that the job requirement of having a high school diploma through the work with the community colleges and the trades and fields area versus a GED is being recognized because, you know, that there's still a need, whether we realize it or not, in our community for our young people who are not necessarily matured at a certain level to have other opportunities to get at least some type of employment. And I don't want us to, while I think the idea here of the focus with the high school diploma is very much paramount and the goal that we should have, but we need to also recognize that there will be some that may not fit that particular category, and are we trying to steer them into an occupation with the hopes that they will get that degree? Because sometimes it may take you longer to get it, or they may get a GED or equivalent. So I didn't know if that's being talked about at all. And we're probably talking about a smaller percentage, but it's an important percentage to take a look at.
Absolutely. And that's something that, you know, a four-year degree may not be the best solution for every kid out there. I mean, let's face it, not every kid is going to want to or going to have, you know, need to go to a four-year college. And I think that that's something that they need to be told in high school. Sometimes I think that, you know, they need to be told that there are great quality jobs that will pay you very, very well that don't necessarily require a four-year degree in order to get that job. They may not even require a two-year degree. They may need apprenticeship on-the-job training. There are lots and lots of employers out there in this county that are willing to do that. And that's the big thing that I want to make sure that they understand. If when they're in high school they feel like they for whatever reason in their life aren't going to be able to go on to a 2 or 4 year degree institution, that there are other opportunities out there for them and that they can have a great quality of life.
Wayne, many of those, you said roughly 1,500 jobs listed on the Work at Ames board right now, many of them are jobs that don't require 4 year degrees, and they pay in excess of $20 an hour, many of those jobs, I know.
Absolutely.
And so I've heard back from multiple local employers, primarily employers of skilled workforce, but not necessarily highly educated workforce, that this was the first time they had an opportunity to get into the high schools and actually start to talk about what was necessary. And so you look at some of our major employers, be it Danfoss or multiple, where they've got jobs that are ready to be filled today, and they can't find anybody to fill them. And these are jobs that pay really, really well.
Yeah, they do. They pay very, very well. And they've been dying to get in front of students. So this is giving them a conduit of a way to get in front of students, to get in front of them in junior high, you know, level. This wasn't just high school. This was junior high and high school, both. So trying to figure out ways to, you know, get them to come together. There have been some really exciting discussions that have been happening. I think that we're going to see some new and innovative ways that the school districts are going to come about using this. So I'm really excited. You guys are going to have to keep your eyes open on what's going to come through the news here in the next 6 months. So. Career fairs is another thing that I've been assisting them with. Again, just trying to get...
Oh, look at that handsome guy.
You look at the handsome guy in the upper left-hand corner.
Almost look like a twin.
I know. Thank you very much for taking your time to attend that and speak with the students. But having, you know, industry partners come in, they spent a whole day talking to students up there or down in Ballard.
You almost look like you belong in Flash.
He was very comfortable there. Let's just put it that way. They really enjoyed him. You know, and Gilbert does a great program as well. They have career days. They have a Business Horizons program. If you guys haven't been up there for that, I strongly encourage you to do it. It's a really neat program. Both of those schools are trying to break out of the norm and figure out new ways to engage students and get them excited. So these are some of the ways that we're trying to help them do that, help them make those business connections early on so that they understand that there are great opportunities right here in Story County. They don't have to go anywhere. They can have a wonderful life right here. The See Yourself in Ames Summer Internship Program. This is something that kicked off last Wednesday, and every other Wednesday evening I have something set up. And there, I had a PDF, I think, that you guys have as well with the programming for that this year. But this focuses more on college students going for that four-year degree, trying to be subtle about the fact that there are great opportunities right here and that I hope that they... take a look at those and not think that they need to flee the area once they graduate, that there are all kinds of industries and businesses in this community that provide them great quality of life, a great home life. There's fun things for college students to do. Sometimes they don't realize that there's more to Ames and Story County than Campus Town. So trying to get them away from that area, do some networking, meet some business people so that they can make those connections. Make it a little harder for them to leave Ames and Story County when they graduate. So.
This is key for us. So as we talk about the Research Park expansion, going from what is currently 1,800 jobs out there to close to 6,000 jobs over the next X number of years, the reality is many of those positions are going to be filled by these young people that are coming through, mostly Iowa State, but Iowa State and other places that are interning here in Ames. And, Angie, I think you just hit on it. You know, I've had two children go through Iowa State, and the typical ISU student sees campus and Welch Avenue, and they don't see a whole lot else. This is a great opportunity. Well, I think Peter is a great example of this, Drew. If he doesn't go through this intern in Ames, he doesn't recognize what all Ames has to offer beyond what's happening at Iowa State.
Yeah, very much so. Peter has actually attested to that fact before. He interned for us before we hired him about a year ago, and it's been a good experience for him and us both.
Yeah. At Wednesday night's event, I am amazed at how many interns are not from Ames and Iowa State that are a part of this program. So that gives us a huge opportunity to showcase our community and this county to those people and have them look at coming for a job here when they graduate from, gosh, we had them from, a few of them from California, BYU, several from the University of Iowa, Wisconsin, a couple from Missouri. So hopefully we can entice those kids to take a look at the Ames community when they graduate to come here for a job. So that would be awesome.
I don't know whether you have even thought about this, but is there any connection or tie-in with Home Base Iowa and working with veterans and so forth that are coming back from deployment and seeking job opportunities as well?
Yeah, you know, Iowa State has their own Jason Chacon. I always have a hard name time with his name.
Jason Chacon.
Thank you. He does a fabulous job at Iowa State in trying to, you know, get those people that are going to college to consider staying here. And I think that that's a easy sell for them. They've brought their families here. They've earned their degrees here. And hopefully we can keep them here. So there's a lot of great forces kind of working together to try and make sure that we keep that veteran community here and show them that this is a great place to live and raise their family. A concierge program is something that, again, we're just trying to make an entire program working with our employers in ways that they can attract people from outside this area to look to move here. Like you said, we have 1,800 jobs in the research park now, and they're going to go to 6,000. Those people got to come from somewhere. And more than likely, we're going to be looking at trying to bring them in from outside areas. So we have to have a major community attraction program going on here to make this a place that people will consider. I mean, we're competing with major metropolitan areas, and so we're trying to work with our companies and find out what it is that they need, make sure that we're working together with them and promoting the community. It's their job to promote their company. It is our job to promote our community, and hopefully we can come together and make a really nice package to entice these people to come here.
I
know. I was going to
about say
you
were two slides early.
You didn't look at my slides ahead of time.
No, I didn't. I think so.
Of course, Home Base Iowa is a big program that we work with. Wonderful program. Jason Kemp started, I think, 3 weeks before I did in our positions, so we kind of giggle that we're the newbies on the block. But he's doing a wonderful job with that. And we're here to support him in any way possible. I served on a steering committee for him in getting his summit meeting put together this year. I don't know if any of you guys were able to attend that summit meeting in April. Wonderful event, brought together all the communities, the educational institutions, and the businesses together in one room, and to try and get them to start working together instead of working in individual silos. So it was a great event. Hopefully we can continue to support those events, and Jason will keep that going. They've got the new website out there. I gave you the link to that, so you can go look at it if you haven't already. And they have some interns that are going to be working to make that even better. And Leanne and I have been working together to make sure that Story County has a good, vibrant presence on that website. So let's see. We have nearly 60 Story County home HBI employers, and I hope to grow that even more. I have an ECI meeting scheduled in June, which is an Employers Council of Iowa meeting, that will focus on hiring veterans and how hiring a veteran is different than hiring a regular civilian. So hopefully we can gain some support for that. And then the Employers Council of Iowa is something that I work on in conjunction with Iowa Workforce Development. Gives employers a place to come to, you know, just get some continuing education type of things. Give them an opportunity to do some networking and meet others, you know, in their field as well. So the first meeting was held on March 15th. The topic was Breaking Up is Hard to Do, Employee Termination and Discipline. And we had Joelle Whitney, who is an attorney for the Davis Brown Law Firm, and that is her area of expertise. She did a wonderful job with that as our kickoff meeting. So we're really excited. I think we've got about 20 registered to attend the June meeting. And hopefully, as we get a little closer, we'll get even more people registered to attend. So that's about all I have for you, unless you have more questions for me.
Thank you very much. Drew, anything to wrap us up?
Both of you for your outstanding presentation and all the work you're doing in this area. Very impressive. No wonder we're so well thought of nationally as a community and programs with the far out the thoughtful process and the planning and forward-looking that we are engaged in. I think it's really being recognized. And so it takes leaders like yourself. And what's even better for me is to, I use the term millennium, so I'm going to have to put you in that group yet.
You're not quite. Drew can be, but I'm way past that.
Oh, thank you. Well, anyway, but I believe that, you know, having your presence in the community speaks volumes, and I think when you go out and engage with young people, it makes a big difference, you know, than seeing someone quite my age.
It's a fun job to have.
Yeah. We just want to make sure we thank the board, and we look forward to the strong and continuing relationship with you guys.
This board has been so happy with the results. Wayne, as you recall, when we decided to invest some dollars into economic development and workforce development for the community, the smaller communities specifically in Story County, I think we had a group of three or four different groups apply to serve that. I've been so happy with our decision to go with the ABC. The real beauty, and Drew didn't get to touch on this, of our relationship with the ABC is it means that we're not having to pay for things here locally twice. There are items that AEDC already had, some computer programs and different infrastructure kind of items that we're able to piggyback on without having to pay extra for. And the other thing it does is, beyond Angie and Drew and Peter, it gives an awareness to all the people in the Angie Chamber and the AEDC that there is a larger community beyond the Ames City limits, and I'm really appreciative that that seems to always be considered in everything that you and your compadres at the ADC do. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is public comment number two, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. Reno Moore, last chance. All right. Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates.
Pass.
And I'll pass. Announcements from Supervisor Wayne.
Okay, pass.
Tonight will be the meeting of the Treasurer, Auditor, Recorder at 5:30. Austin, tough decision for you as you figure out where you're going to be tonight, huh?
I'll be here.
All right. Could get interesting. They've also secured June 8th, I believe, as a secondary meeting date where if they don't make a decision tonight, they'll come back at that point, but excited to see what the board's going to look like for the next 6 months as they do their work. And I think there were 15 people that applied. It seemed to be some really, really good people from around the community, and they got their work cut out for them.
Okay.
There's nothing else. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Move adjournment.
Second, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.